Chapter 2. Murphy declined to ride in the Blue Beetle, my old Volkswagen Bug. The Beetle wasn't really blue, not anymore. One of the doors had been replaced with a green duplicate and the other with white, when something with claws had shredded the originals. The hood had been slagged by fire, and my mechanic, Mike, had replaced it with the hood from a red vehicle. The important thing is that the Beetle runs, even if it doesn't do it very fast, and I'm comfortable with the car. Mike had declared that the VW Bug was the easiest car in the world to repair, and so that's what I drive. He keeps it running 8 or 9 days in 10. That's phenomenal. Technology tends to foul up around wizards. Flip on a light switch, and it'll be the time when the bulb burns out. Drive past a street light, and it'll pick just then to flicker and die. Whatever can go wrong will, automobiles included. And I didn't think it made much sense for Murphy to risk her vehicle when she could have taken mine. But she said she'd take her chances. She didn't speak as she drove her Saturn down the JFK towards the Rosemont. I watched her, uncomfortable as we went. She was in a hurry, taking a few too many chances cutting in and out of traffic, and I put on my seatbelt. At least we weren't on her motorcycle. "Murph," I asked her, "where's the fire?" She glanced at me. "I want you out there before some other people show up." "Press?" I couldn't quite keep a nasty slur out of the word. She shrugged. "Whoever." I frowned at her, but she didn't say anything else, which seemed typical. Murphy didn't speak much to me anymore. We rode the rest of the way in silence, exited the JFK, and pulled into a parking lot of a half-completed little strip mall. We got out of the car. A jet came in, low, heading for O'Hare International Airport, only a few miles to the west. I squinted at it for a moment, and then frowned at Murphy as a uniformed officer led us toward a building being surrounded by police tape. There was an abundance of light, the moon overhead bright silver, and almost a completely round circle. I cast an enormous gangly shadow as I walked, my duster flapping around my legs. It towered beside Murphy's far smaller shadow ahead of me. "Murphy," I said, "aren't we outside Chicago city limits?"
"Yeah," Murphy said shortly.
"Hmm. Then aren't we out of your jurisdiction, technically?" "People need help whenever they can get it, Dresden. And the last several killings happened in Chicago, so we want to take a look at this firsthand. I already worked things out with the local force. It's not really an issue."
"Several killings?" I said. "Several? As in more than one? Murphy, slow down."
But she didn't. Instead, she led me into a roomy building that proved to be under construction, though all the exterior work was finished. Some of the windows were still covered with board. I didn't see any sign of the building's front doors until I got close.
"The Varsity," I said, reading it.
"I thought Marconi burned it down last spring."
"Mm-hmm," Murphy said, glancing at me over her shoulder. "Relocated and rebuilding.
Chicago's resident crime lord, Gentleman Johnny Marconi, was the robber baron of the mean streets. He kept all the rough business inside the city proper, leaving his legitimate interests out in the suburbs, like here in Rosemont. Last spring, when I had confronted him in his club, a previous incarnation of the Varsity, about a deadly new drug on the streets, the place had wound up burning to the ground. After the whole mess was over, word got out that the drug dealer I'd taken out had been Marconi's enemy, and that I had nuked him at the crime lord's request. I hadn't refuted the rumor. It was easier to let people talk than force Marconi to make an issue of things. Inside the building, the floors were rough, unfinished. Someone turned on a couple of halogen work lights, and they cast the interior into a bright, clear white light. There was drywall dust everywhere. There were a couple of card tables set up, with workmen's tools left out on them in places. Plastic buckets of paint, tarps, and a sack of new paintbrushes waited for use off to one side. I didn't notice the blood until Murphy put her arm out in front of me to keep me from walking into it. "Wake up, Dresden," she said. Her voice was grim. I stopped and looked down. Blood. A lot of blood. It began near my feet, where a long spatter had reached out like an arm from a drowning man, staining the dusty floor with scarlet. My eyes followed the path of the long blood stain back to a pool, maybe an eighth of an inch deep,
surrounding a mound of ripped cloth and torn meat that must have been the corpse. My stomach quailed, threatening to eject the bites of steak I'd taken earlier that evening, but I forced it down. I walked in a circle around the body, keeping my distance. The corpse was, I guessed, that of a male in his 30s. He had been a large man with a short, spiky haircut. He had fallen onto his side, facing away from me, his arms curled up toward his head, his legs up toward his vitals. A weapon, a little automatic pistol, lay 7 or 8 feet away, uselessly out of the victim's reach. I walked around the corpse until I could see the face. Whatever had killed him, it hadn't been human. His face was gone, simply torn away. Something had ripped his lips off. I could see his blood-stained teeth. His nose had been torn all the way up one side, and part of it dangled toward the floor. His head was misshapen, as though some enormous pressure had been put on his temples, warping his skull in. His eyes were gone, torn out of his head, bitten out. There were the ragged slash marks of fangs all around the edges of the sockets. I closed my eyes tightly, took a deep breath, another, a third. That didn't help. The body stank, a sickly sewer smell that ran up from the torn innards. My stomach wanted to roll up in my throat, out of my mouth and onto the floor. I could remember the other details, even with my eyes closed, and cataloged them neatly for later reference. The victim's jacket and shirt had been torn to bloody ribbons, along with his forearms in defensive wounds. His hands and arms were a mass of pulped, ripped meat, the palms and fingers slashed into ragged lumps. The curl of his body hid his abdomen from me, but that's where the blood was pooling from, spreading out like ink from a spilled bottle. The stench only confirmed that he had been eviscerated. I turned away from the corpse and opened my eyes, staring down at the floor. "Harry?" Murphy said from the far side of the body. The note of hardness that had been in her voice all evening was absent. She hadn't moved when I'd done my cursory examination. "I recognize him," I said. "At least I think I do. You'll need to check dental records or something to be sure." I could hear the frown in her words. "Yeah? Who was he?" "I don't know his name. I always called him Spike, for the haircut. He was one of Johnny Marconi's bodyguards." Murphy was quiet for a while, and then said succinctly, "Shit." "What, Murph?" I looked back at her without looking down at Spike's mangled remains. Murphy's face was set in concern. For me, her blue eyes gentle, I saw her wipe the expression away as quickly as a shadow across the floor, a smoothing of lines that left her features neutral. I guess she hadn't expected me to turn to her. "Take a look around a little more," she said. "Then we'll talk." "What am I looking for?" I asked her. "You'll know it," she said, then added in a whisper that I didn't think she intended me to hear, "I hope." I turned back to my work and looked around the room. Off to one side, one of the windows was broken. Near it was a table, lying askew on the floor, its legs warped and bent. I walked over to it. Broken glass littered the ground around the collapsed table. Since the glass was on the inside of the building, something must have come through the window. There was blood on several of the broken pieces of glass. I picked up one of the larger ones and frowned at it. The blood was dark red and not wholly dried. I took a white handkerchief from my pocket, folded a shard of glass onto it, and slid it into the pocket of my duster. I rose and paced over the floor, my eyes downcast, studying the dust. In one spot, it was rubbed almost clean off the floor, as though a struggle had taken place there without blood being spilled. In another spot, where the halogen lamps didn't quite reach, there was a pool of silver moonlight below a window. I knelt down beside it. In the center of the pool was a paw print in the dust. A paw print, almost as big as my spread hand. Canine. Dots at the tips of the paw spoke of heavy nails, almost claws. I looked up through the window at the rounded silver shape of the almost full moon. Oh, hell, I breathed. Oh, hell. Murphy came toward me and watched me silently for a moment, waiting. I licked my lips, stood up, and turned to her.